Welcome to the Chris Saylor Show. I'm Jerry Price. I'm joined by Princeton women's lacrosse coach Chris Saylor. And Chris, congratulations on the Ivy League championship.
Thanks, Jerry.
It was a little chillier than you might have thought for late April, but a day started with snow, but it ended with a championship up in Ithaca, and we got a lot to talk about here. We have the Ivy League tournament coming up, which starts on Friday. Princeton will play Cornell again in the first round. That's the second semifinal at Columbia, 5 o'clock start. Penn and Dartmouth in the first semifinal at 2, and I honestly have not yet looked up what time is the final on Sunday.
Final's at 1:30.
So 1:30, the winners of the two games on Friday will meet at 1:30 on Sunday in the championship. The winner gets an automatic bid to the NCAA tournament. Princeton will be in the NCAA tournament no matter what it does this weekend, but is playing for a home game, so a motivated team. We have all this stuff to talk about, and so, of course, let's start with Courtney Banghart. Courtney leaving to take over the head coaching job at the University of North Carolina, and everybody here wishing her well. And, you know, and we'll get into your team, and we'll talk a lot about your team, but I just did want to ask you about Courtney because, you know, she's somebody who came here as a 29-year-old head coach and achieved tremendous successes, and I'm assuming that at some point during that time she leaned on you for advice. And like, what was your advice to her when she was a young coach getting here? I know she's referenced this to me before.
Oh, my gosh. I really don't remember. I don't know that Courtney needed a whole lot of advice from me. I mean, she's just such an incredible coach and has done a tremendous job leading the program authentically with her energy that she brings each and every day and her positivity. I'm so happy for her that she has this great opportunity down at Carolina, but I'm really sorry to see her and the whole family leave. I'm really going to miss them.
So one thing people talk about is Pete Carril, and he was here for 29 years, and he won 13 Ivy titles, 11 NCAA tournaments. Everybody knows what Pete Carril did. And ever since then, people have always said, well, they're going to be the next Pete Carril. And people said Courtney is going to be the next Pete Carril. And really, if you think about it, the only person who has really come closest to being the next Pete Carril or like have a Pete Carril type of career is you. You've stayed here the whole time. You've succeeded. You've continued that success from start to finish. You know, or not finish. We're not kicking you out. But from the beginning till currently, obviously with 6 straight Ivy League titles, I'm assuming at some point you had opportunities to take other positions. I don't actually know that for a fact. But what's the lure that's kept you here all this time?
I really think just this place. It's really seemed like the home for me and the right type of place for me. The fact that we've been able to be successful here over time and working with the types of student athletes that are attracted to a place like Princeton, with the support we get from the university and the athletic department, and to be able to compete at a really high level. I haven't felt that need that, you know, I needed to go off and make my mark elsewhere. For me, it was about establishing longevity in the program and creating a program that stood the test of time.
Well, Courtney off to North Carolina. We wish her the best, and now we can get back to focusing on 2019 Princeton women's lacrosse. So let's start Saturday in Ithaca. It was very cold. It was windy. It was not, you know, the ideal day to play. Your team came out very focused, built a huge lead. Cornell, to its credit, fought hard to the end. It made that game very close, and there had to be some white-knuckle moments at the end. But, you know, you got the stops you needed and the goals you needed at the time. What's your takeaway from the first game between you and Cornell?
Well, I think the takeaway is that, you know, when we're playing our best, we're a pretty tough team to beat. And I think you saw that over the first half and maybe the first 10 minutes of the second half. And then you also saw that Cornell is a strong club in their own right. And, you know, if we're not playing our best game, that, you know, other teams might be able to score some goals on us. And I think we learned a lot from that first game. And, you know, we've spent some time breaking down the tape and watching that with the players. And, you know, I think we're going to be better overall when we take the field again on Friday.
Do you think the cold weather not doesn't impact the game, but like in general, do you think weather impacts the games?
I mean, to a small extent, but, you know, it really is the same for everybody. I don't think Cornell was really used to that weather that we had that day either. It's one thing if it's freezing cold and wet and you just can't feel the stick. And, you know, those types of games are really tough, often leads to a lot of turnovers. I'm thinking of our game at Virginia in the pouring rain of February earlier this year. I think that affects the overall play. But weather's one of those things you just can't control. So, you know, you can't focus on it too much. We usually acknowledge it. Hey, it might not be the kind of weather we wanted, but it's the weather we have. So let's just get out there and play our game and do our thing.
So now you have to turn around right away and play Cornell again. Is there a benefit to either team of having, you know, Cornell knows that if it doesn't dig itself a 9-goal hole and plays the way it did for the last, you know, 17, 18 minutes of the game, it's going to win. You know that you built that big lead, and if you do that again, odds are they're not going to make the kind of run that they did. So both teams can go into the game with confidence.
Yeah, though, you know, I think the one thing you can be sure of is that the game will likely be different than the first game. We saw that last year with Penn. We beat them 21-8 in the regular season, and it was a 3-goal championship game. So you can't assume that the game's going to go the same way. We've just got to be ready to compete. I'm sure Cornell comes in a lot more confidently after the second half than they would have if we had, you know, maintained that same lead. But we also know what we're capable of and can put up some big numbers if we're playing well against them.
I mean, Cornell's sitting there saying, look, if we put 15 up again, we're probably going to win the game, or if at the very least, we're going to be right in the game the entire way, as opposed to playing from behind the way they did. And I would assume that that gives you confidence.
Well, I guess we'll see. I think there's reasons for both teams to be confident. I think the most interesting thing about the game is that the score almost exactly reflected the draw controls. In the first half, we won the draws 12-6, and the score was 12-5. In the second half, they won the draws 10-6, and the second half score was 10-6 for Cornell. So that's just often happens in the game.
So are there adjustments that can be made one week to the next? I assume they have to be subtle.
Yeah, there will be some subtle adjustments that are made. But, you know, so many of those balls are 50-50 balls. And, you know, it's are you seeing the ball as it comes off the crosses? Are you making the right move in or, you know, to get that ball that's going behind you? Are there subtle changes and things that George can be aware of on the circle in terms of where she's trying to put it? And just gutting out the ground balls. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
March Donovan had a really good game on the circle, and that was, I believe, her first time playing on the circle this year.
She did. I mean, she was big on the circle last year. We've gone with Noni and
Hallett.
And Hallett, yeah, this year. And we decided to go with Marge in the last game. I think we'll use both of them this game coming up.
So let's talk a little bit about Ivy League championships. That's 6 in a row. You can never take any of them for granted, obviously. But some years you just roll to an Ivy League title. This was not one of them. And this was a very, very difficult road, specifically road, having to win on the home field of the other three teams that are in the Ivy tournament. When after you lost to Brown, you needed to win all 5 of your remaining games. And you won them by 2 goals, 2 goals, 2 goals, 3 goals. And then the game against Yale wasn't very close. But so a lot of close moments that could have gone either way.
Yeah.
Does this one feel a little sweeter? Or they all feel sweet, or in the moment it feels sweet?
I think they all feel sweet, but this one we really did have to gut out with that early loss, and as you said, had some adversity going on the road. And this is just an incredible year in Ivy League lacrosse. I mean, there is a lot of parity out there in the sport overall, with 116 teams competing and so many great high school players out there. There's no games anymore that you can really take for granted. I mean, most all of the games that we play in the league are going to be competitive. You know, you might have one or two in a given season like we had this year that aren't, but most of them will be. And so, you know, that makes it exciting, and you have to be ready to battle for the full game, and we did that this year.
So I'm a big believer that the difference between winning and losing is often very subtle, and it's not, you know, oh, we scored the goal in the last 30 seconds to win the game, but you can look at little pieces of things that happen along the way. And I think the biggest moment of the entire season was when Kyla Sears picked up the ground ball against Dartmouth, and the pass that was over her head might have sailed out of bounds, and she was able to knock it down. The ball was loose. She picks up the ground ball. Now Dartmouth is sort of swarming, but she fights through, picks it up, and finds Hallett cutting, and that's the game-winning goal. You don't pick that ground ball up. Dartmouth's coming the other way. Maybe they score. Maybe you don't win that game. If you don't win that game, maybe you don't beat Penn. You know, it changes a lot of things, and it's all very subtle. And I think that it's a lot to say that an entire season can come down to one loose ball. But is that something that players just know that, look, if I don't do this in this moment, the ripple effect of this is going to be tremendous? Or do you just approach it that way?
You're not approaching it that way. I think in the game, you're just really trying to make a play. I think at that point in the game, it was just a critical moment, and Kyla was going to do whatever she had to do to possess that ball for us. And that's just an example of a great lacrosse player making a really athletic play and then using her poise and her vision to be able to find the open kid. And Hallett, with her 78% shooting percentage or whatever crazy number she has right now, being able to find the back of the net. And
there were four Dartmouth defenders sort of looking at Kyla
around Kyla. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's one element of her game that's really developed this year. We've put her behind a little more, and she's become a great playmaker for us as well as a finisher, and that's made her just much harder to defend, and it's made our team better.
So the All-Ivy League team was announced this week, and Princeton did very well. Has the attacker of the year is Elizabeth George. It has the defender of the year, Noni Anderson. The goalie of the year is Sam Fish. Co-coach of the year is Chris Saylor. Kyla Sears is the unanimous first-team All-Ivy, so she's first-team All-Ivy for the second straight, you know, as a freshman and a sophomore.
Pretty good.
I haven't had a chance to look that up, but how many players off the top of your head have done that, first-team All-Ivy as a freshman and a sophomore?
Off the top of my head, I'm not too sure,
not
too many. I think probably Christy Samaras might be the one that comes to mind. She might be the one.
So, I mean, I'll go look that up. But
yeah, Jerry, I'm surprised you don't have that. Normally you would have that stat for us.
It's a tremendous accomplishment, though, by Kyla Sears.
Absolutely.
And, overall, pleased with the All-Ivy team. Tess Yorsey's second team could have been first team.
Yeah, I thought Tess could have been first team, but it's tough. There's so many great
Hallett
attackers
was second team.
In the league.
Marge was only honorable mention. She's up there with anybody on any given day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're not going to get all your kids on the first team as much as you'd like, and there are quality kids throughout this league. So to have eight of our players selected to the All-Ivy team.
Alex Argo.
Yeah, Alex Argo, second team. You know, I would have loved to have seen at least Alex and Tess, I think, really challenge for that first team position. But, you know, I think we're thrilled with the results of the All-Ivy and the players of the year. And I think it's just reflective of the great season that we've had.
So moving forward now, it's the Ivy League tournament. Cornell on Friday. Should Princeton win that game, it would play Sunday against the winner of Penn and Dartmouth. But then beyond that is the NCAA tournament. Your team is clearly going to be in the field no matter what happens this weekend. But if you win a couple of games, you can end up at home. Is the motivation, I think, is just pretty strong anyway. Anytime there's a championship involved, what's your attitude heading
right
into this
Well,
event?
I mean, if there's a championship involved, we want to win it. And we want to win it because there's a championship involved, and it's the Ivy Tournament Championship. And I believe this would be our third in 4 years. And that's really meaningful to us. We have the most tournament championships of any school in the conference right now, and we want to keep that streak alive. So that's really our motivation this weekend. And, you know, I think it will help our RPI because of the teams we're playing have done so well. So, you know, if that can get us a hosting opportunity for the first two rounds of the NCAA, that would be fantastic to be able to play back on 52 field again. And we thought, you know, after senior day and the kids, this is our last time on 52. I'm like, look, if we went out, we have a shot of hosting. I think that's when it first kind of got in their mindset that we could potentially play at home again. But we got to, obviously, we have a big task in front of us and challenge with the two games this weekend.
Have you looked at all the permutations of NCAA tournaments and possible matchups and destinations and all that kind of stuff?
Of course not, because I know you have, Jerry, but it's just so hard to figure out with the regional piece. It's not just rankings, but it's, you know, they're going to try and minimize flights, and there are still conference tournaments yet to be decided, and are there going to be upsets? So I'm just focusing on preparing, you know, for the weekend. And I used to do all of that when I was younger and when the field wasn't so big. You know, maybe there were 16 teams or 8 teams. It was a whole lot easier. Now when you're picking 26 teams plus playing games and you've got the regional alignments, and it's really hard to figure out.
So your team playing Cornell, that's a 5:00 start on Friday. That's at Columbia, centrally located for you know, New York City alums and such. First time the women are playing at Columbia. Are you looking forward to making that? Obviously, Princeton would be hosting it if it was the rules of last year, and you'd love to host it. But, you know, forgetting that piece of it, are you interested to see what it does for attendance?
I am interested to see what it does for attendance. I think that's the one plus about having this kind of a situation. Personally, I'm of the feeling that you fight all year long to be the champ and to earn the top seed, and that should come with the hosting rights. But, you know, I'm willing to give it a shot and see how it goes and see if it creates a great atmosphere and a really good fan base. and then make a decision moving forward.
It's interesting that it overlaps a bit with the men's tournament. So your game is at 5, and the first men's game is at 6, and they're obviously on different fields. I thought all 4 games were on the same field.
No, it was one piece they were looking at, but then, you know, you'd have games starting really early in the morning, and so there's some overlap, and there's going to be some overlap with the start of the championship game and the end of the men's championship game. And so, you know, we'll see how it all works out and what the feeling is. I know we'd love to be playing at 52 this weekend, but we're just happy to be playing and we're looking forward to the tournament.
So it'll be Princeton-Cornell, 5 o'clock on Saturday. Penn-Dartmouth is 2 o'clock on the, I don't know the actual name of the field, but it's the soccer field at Columbia University.
Yeah.
The men's tournament on the football stadium, their games are 6 and 8:30. So then the women's final, you said 1:30 on Sunday.
Yes.
And we'll be back next week to talk about how the Ivy League tournament went and to look ahead to the NCAA tournament, as Princeton will assuredly be in the NCAA tournament regardless of what happens this weekend. Congratulations once again on the Ivy League championship.
Thanks, Jerry. I want to say good luck to Coach Banghart and her new job down at UNC. We'll be cheering for the Tar Heel women's basketball
team.
Somebody
did a really good job photoshopping her picture here with Carolina Blue.
Oh, I'm like, how did she go out and buy that top already? I thought I recognized that picture. I'm like, wow, she must have been on top of that. Okay, there you go.
That's the picture from our podcast. So for Princeton women's lacrosse coach Chris Saylor, I'm Jerry Price. Thank you for being with us here each week on the Chris Saylor Show. And we'll look forward to talking to you next week after the Ivy League tournament. Thank you once again for your continued support of Princeton women's lacrosse.